Hey, welcome in. Today's Gun Talk Hunt is brought to you by Leupold Be Relentless and Timney Triggers, the world's finest triggers. Timney Triggers has been making affordable quality triggers in the U.S. since 1946. The latest trigger to come out of the shop is an upgrade for your CZ Scorpion rifle. That's kind of neat. Also, Timney engineered every component of the new Scorpion trigger to elevate your accuracy, featuring a preset factory pull weight of 2¾ to 3¾ pounds. Bottom line is, Timney triggers are one of those things that you can upgrade your gun. It's a simple thing to do. Even I could do it. And it makes you a better shooter. So find out more, find your next trigger at timneytriggers.com.
I think it's important to note that it makes your gun better. Not necessarily always makes you a better shooter, but it makes it a lot easier.
It makes it easier to be a good shooter? Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I'd say it's easier to be a better shooter. It allows you to have a more consistent pool.
Yeah, absolutely.
But today's Gun Talk Hunt is a good, it's a special one for me because I get to have my good buddy Jeremy King on. And if you've hunted the state of Iowa for any game, you've probably come across him. He is a game warden up there in Iowa. And welcome on, Jeremy.
Hey, it's a pleasure.
Oh, no, we got the cops here. The cops are here.
Yeah, the cops are in town, the hunting cops. But some of the most interesting people you meet because they have the best stories. But Jeremy actually last year, I guess in 2010 and 2019, was awarded the Whitetail Deer Officer of the Year Award. Is that correct?
Yeah, for all the officers, game wardens across the state of Iowa.
And that's coming high praise because Iowa is a big state and it's a big whitetail state. If you know whitetail deer hunting, you know the state of Iowa is the mecca. And I struck out there last year while hunting with Jeremy, and it wasn't because of Jeremy.
So what is the Whitetail Officer of the Year deal? What is that?
What that is every supervisor or captain in the district in this entire state of Iowa nominates who they think is their best officer that deserves that award. And they write their credentials on why they think they deserve it. Then they get together in a command staff meeting and discuss and basically argue and sell your pitch on why you think your officer was the most deserving. And then they vote on them and across the state. And that's how they pick it out.
That's cool. That's awesome.
I will tell you how good he is. This is impressive. And he really is. And he is a white-tailed deer detective, and he is an expert at hunting humans. Is that a lie?
No, that's what I tell people. I hunt for fun and hunt animals for fun and people for a living.
Yeah, see? And so he has this story, and I'm going to let him tell it. But while we were there, he hunted down a guy just from a muzzleloader bullet. Like he had, and I'll let you take it over because it's too hard for me to explain. And the process to which he actually like went through to catch this guy is actually impressive. I'll let you take it.
Well, you know, it's nothing that you couldn't do. I got that phone call and you helped me. You confirmed what I thought too. Yeah. So this was a joint effort. You were part of this as well.
I could be
a sting detective. Operation.
Yeah. I think he's on his way. And what happened is I got a phone call from in Guthrie County, where one of the counties I patrol is in the west central southwest corner of Iowa. And it's a heavily deer hunted area. We got a lot of deer, big timber, some streams run through it. So deer hunting is very prevalent in the county. And we have a county hospital. We're the only county in the state of Iowa that doesn't have a stoplight anywhere in the entire county. We got 10,000 people in the entire county.
Wow.
Yeah, we're an hour from Des Moines, which is one of the most populous counties. So it's it's a neat area. And our hospital, being small rural area, isn't a large one. And I got a call in the morning, and I don't even remember what day of the week it was on, but just one morning I got a call from the hospital staff saying, hey, we found a bullet laying in one of our rooms of our hospital. So I swung by, and they showed me the window that was broken out, and there this bullet had hit a door jamb. I could find the spot on the door jamb where the bullet had impacted the door jamb. Now, if it had been 2 inches to either side, it had gone through the drywall of the door. Yeah. It just happened to hit the jamb, and it fell straight down like somebody dropped it on the floor. And I remember I grabbed that bullet immediately. There's a handful of bullets you can look at, muzzleloaders, and go, I know what that is. and this was one. And KJ, he nailed it.
We were hunting with a buddy, and we both agreed that we didn't know if he would be able to identify it.
Yeah, it's one of those. It was a power belt, no question about it. So I picked it up and started driving around, and there's some people hunt some neighboring property that I've had issues with, and immediately, if I had to put my week's wages, it would have been on them. I went and interviewed them, talked to them. Their stories, him and another guy's story who was hunting with them, lined up, and I believe it wasn't them. That evening, then I started driving around looking, trying to draw lines, trying to figure out where everything came from, and end up, I find a ground blind on a guy that was in a field a ways away. And I walked up there and checked him, and he's sitting nowhere near where you could put a bullet into this hospital from. As I was talking to him and checking his license, he said he had missed a deer the day before. I said, that's interesting. I said, were you hunting the same property? And he was. So I had him pull out his gun or his bullets, his speed loaders. And lo and behold, here's a power belt bullets in both speed loaders that matched the exact same one that went in. And he had told me a shot the night before and asked him if he was in that ground blind, and he wasn't. He actually crawled out in the field and took a shot prone at a deer on a horizon.
He's laying low. He's shooting up at the deer.
Yep. And that was 820 yards roughly from where he shot to where that bullet went through a window and smacked a door jamb and flattened that bullet out. Wow. It still had that much power at 800 yards.
So I have a question, Jeremy. Do you think where he shot from, could he see the hospital in the background there?
You could see the roof of it.
Okay, so it kind of went over a hill or something.
It did. Yep. You can see just the top of the roof. And the bad thing too is this guy should have known better. This town sits in this crop field. It's a cornfield, and it butts right up to town. And literally, like somebody draws the line, houses start in yards. Mm-hmm. And he's shooting directly at town. I'm like, man, you got a 50-50 chance of hitting a house if you don't hit that deer.
Wow.
And you still might hit a house even if it goes through that deer.
Right. It's absolutely
got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And one of the four rules of gun safety is know your target and its backstop, you know, so what's beyond that target. And man.
So yeah. And he disputed it at first and wanted to fight the idea that it was him. And a lot of times people have, the hardest part is coming to grips and admitting that, hey, I messed up.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people just need that out and they don't know what that out is. And I say that to the point of where I'll give somebody the out of, I know you did this. You normally don't do this. You're a good person. You got caught up in the moment. And the problem is he wouldn't admit to it until he had an out. And we found that out, or I helped him find his out of not being able to see the hospital. I understand it wasn't on purpose. And you normally never shoot that way. Yep. That's it. I just messed up. I got caught up in the moment.
Yeah.
And then we were okay. So luckily nobody was hurt. It was right through the doctors, actually one of the lead doctors. Went right through his office window.
Wow.
Jeez, nobody was in there, thank goodness. And I think from where it entered the window to where it hit the door jamb, it was 14 feet apart, the distance between the window and the door jamb. And that bullet had only dropped a half an inch.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, a muzzle loader, you think people will say, well, it's not going that fast. It's not that powerful. But you're throwing a large chunk of lead out there. It's kind of hard to stop a freight train kind of thing. I mean, a big slug of a 45 or 50 caliber muzzleloader. Jeez.
Yep. Yeah, it could be scary. It could have been a lot worse. That's the best part is it was a window, insurance covered it, and it's done and over with.
There are so many stories, Jeremy, about people. Now, that one was a mistake he made, right? But there are so many stories about people deliberately trying to get away with things. And in fact, I was just listening to Gun Talk Radio this past week, and we had a caller call in, and he said he was concerned. This was his theory. He was concerned that there may be more illegal hunting, or I guess we call that poaching, because of coronavirus and people wanting to feed their families and all this stuff. And kind of the answer that Tom gave was, well, typically, and you tell me if this is correct, people who break the law hunting deliberately typically have other criminal records It's not a, like a by accident thing. It's a pattern. Is that fair?
I would say a large part of the people I write tickets to investigate are repeat offenders, mm-hmm. for sure. Whether it's burglary or theft or drunk driving or other poaching violations. Yeah, there's definitely a pattern. And most of the time it's premeditated. Very, very few times is it ever to the point where it's, in my opinion anyways, and the ones I've experienced in 16 years of doing this, very, very seldom is it the guy who just gets caught up in the moment and on a whim does something that doesn't make any sense. It's usually, hey, it's organized. You got a few buddies. We're going to go out and do this. Mm-hmm. And it's deliberate.
I also find that a lot of times those types of folks, it seems like they're out in the field hunting all the time. It's like, like, why do you need to kill, you know, whatever it is, 10 deer? When you're one of those people like, well, I killed, I mean, in Louisiana, you can over the counter tag, you can kill 6 deer a season. No problem. Sure. And to me, the crazy thing is people will kill more than that. And it's like, what's the deal?
They get bloodlust, man. They get like so addicted to pulling that trigger. I that's what I think. I think they don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot too has to do with the fact that it's a status. They need it to be accepted. Whether it's by their friends or in these online social media groups, they need to prove their worth and go out and shoot a big deer to make people take them seriously, for them to have a voice.
That's a good point. So you bring up social media websites. How has that changed the way you operate now? Because I know some more game wardens I know, they use it quite a bit.
You know, that's a great question. And 12 years ago, ballpark, Facebook was relatively new. And I got on it and I created a fake account, which we're allowed to do by law. And not knowing, it was in its infancy at that time, not knowing how big it would turn into or what it is now, never would have dreamt it. And I remember I made a couple cases off it. And it was really easy. If somebody laid a $100 bill down in 30 minutes, I could have a poaching case off Facebook. And I did a presentation to all our game wardens at our annual statewide meeting. And literally, as we were talking about it, one guy says, well, I got a kid that poaches a lot. See if he's on there. And this was an older veteran game warden. And I pulled up his name, added him as a friend. While I'm giving this presentation, I show him how you can do this. So it worked out well. The kid, honestly, within minutes, accepts my friend request. I'm like, look, he's already accepted it. This is how it looks. This is working good. And he goes, well, he's suspended. He's not supposed to be hunting. I wonder if he's killed anything. Scroll down.
There it is.
Here he has killed 4 turkeys. And he's only allowed none because he's suspended. And yeah. In minutes, we made a case right there.
Wow.
And that was, like I said, that was 12 years ago when it was new. And it's changed. So people are getting smarter. They understand you stick something on Facebook now, everybody's probably going to see it.
Right.
It's not as good as it was. Now, you know, you've gone to little Instagram. New thing right now, it's been going as TikTok.
Oh, gosh. Jeremy King is on TikTok?
No. No. I got barriers somewhere. I got boundaries.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
But so there has been some. And Snapchat. You know, Snapchat's a tough one because of how it deletes it. And
right.
Even though you can get warrants to get that stuff. But it's tough.
Yeah, it is an interesting tool. And I think, I don't know, I personally, I get a lot of enjoyment out of dumb criminals. And so, you know, post all your illegal happenings on social media. Good. Go do that, you idiot.
it makes my job a lot easier. If criminals were smart, they're hard to catch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were talking before we started the podcast, started recording. We were talking about how it can, even if you're trying to do things the right way, sometimes hunting regulations can be just difficult because they can change county to county, state to state. One way in one state, you're allowed to take them this way. And this state, it's a shotgun only state. I mean, obviously it's on the hunter to know the regs, but we have a lot of people who are trying to get into hunting. It can be challenging to kind of know all this stuff.
It can. You can get jammed up in a hurry. And you're right, exactly. Not only county to county, but it's sometimes fence line to fence line different. whether you're on a waterfowl production area and you can only use steel, or you cross over into an upland area where you can use lead to hunt pheasants.
True.
Just by crossing a fence. It's difficult. And I made it kind of the way I do my job is somebody accidentally, unintentionally breaks a law, I would never dream of writing a ticket. That could happen to anybody. It's the people who deliberately, intentionally go out and violate a law that get tickets from me. And it's the worst part of my job, writing tickets. We talk about, yeah, I got these awards and I make cases every single year. I don't enjoy that part. It's horrible. I hate handing somebody a $20,000 ticket for a deer.
Ooh, yeah.
So when
good for you.
Yeah. When I get new hunters, matter of fact, I can give you a story just from Monday of two college kids that were not from the state. They were up here teal hunting. We had teal all over and they were shooting at wood ducks, and thank God they were terrible shots. I watched them water whack teal or wood ducks and miss them. I watched them fly wood ducks flying by and they're missing them, and they get to my truck and I said, I've never been so happy somebody's so bad at shooting. And you guys should be happy too.
That's perfect.
So, and they didn't know the law that we talked about, and we talked about how tough ducks are to identify on the fly, especially we had low light and cloud cover, not having that sun to pick out wing speculum is difficult. And you nailed on the head as far as state to state. Really, the best thing I can tell people is you make that phone call to the game warden, you get a hold of somebody. And I do the same. One of my best friends is a game warden in Texas, and I met him because I called him. I was going to go down there fishing. And I'm like, what licenses do I need? I'm a game warden in Iowa. I don't need to break a law. I go to North Dakota, Minnesota every year, Wisconsin. I'm calling those game wardens to make sure I have all the proper licenses, because they can change. Every state has different license names. Some need tags. Some don't need tags. You know, I know like in South Dakota, you can just buy a turkey tag. You don't need a hunt license. But you come to Iowa, you need a hunt license and a turkey tag.
Right.
So it varies. It's just research. And even reading those laws can get confusing. There's times I sit down and scratch my head and go, what are we trying to tell people?
Right.
Can we dumb this down?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a difficult process to start weeding through. But I think a lot of people are intimidated by game wardens, but they don't need to be. I mean, I do the same thing. I'll call game wardens. You know, we're about to go to Wyoming in a couple of weeks, and I'll call the game warden before we go. Hey, going to be in your area. Would love to meet up with you, because I'm sure I will anyway. You know, and it's nice. It's nice that they know that. And they know, oh, okay, yeah, I talked to you a few weeks ago. Yeah, you got your licenses. They're going to ask for your license.
Right.
Always have your licenses on you. I mean, just go ahead and like have them out and ready.
Yeah. There's no doubt. I get those phone calls all the time as well. People asking and doing their research and asking about how they can, what areas they can hunt. And even on public land, you know, every state varies on what you can do on public land compared to private land. And it's great hearing from those people, and we love them. And I try not to be intimidating at all. I kind of try to take the laughter approach. My goal, every single encounter I deal with somebody, I want them to smile or laugh. Yeah. That's my goal.
Unless he's investigating you, then he's the last person you want to see.
Like we said, don't break the law.
Just don't break the law. I mean, but you gotta know those regs, man. You've gotta, you know, understand what you're doing.
They change. That's what a lot of folks do. They think, well, I went last year and this is what we did. I mean, we get updates every single year. Laws changing, different things you can and can't do, different weapons you can and cannot use. It's not a perpetual law. It's a law that you need to read up on every single year.
And Jeremy, is there a certain type of hunting or species that people seem to mess up on more than others?
Golly, that's a great question. Should have gave me that before this. So I thought about it. Intentionally or unintentionally mess up?
I guess I kind of meant unintentionally, because they just, it's harder to know all the regs or whatever. You were kind of mentioning like waterfowl identification can be tricky.
And that'll probably be it. Is the one I see the most violations is waterfowl, because you're only allowed certain species. There's so many of certain species. You don't get to just shoot six ducks and you can pick any six.
Yeah.
You know, you can shoot three wood ducks or two pintails or one redhead.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get some juvenile birds that don't have all their colors or low light conditions mixed with that, it's really hard for people. And I've waterfowl hunted before I hunted anything else. That's what I grew up doing. And still I took two kids out, my son and one of his buddies last week. And still then, having looked at millions of birds in my life, I'm still telling them, hold. Okay, those are teal. Shoot.
Right.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's tough. It's
especially difficult. Wood ducks. We mentioned wood ducks earlier. Those can be in teal season when they're mixed in. It can be tough.
Yeah.
They're small. They're colorful.
Yeah. I had some two high school seniors this year that I pulled in the parking lot. I watched them walk out during teal season, and they said, well, we got this one. We think it's a teal, and it ended up being a hen shoveler. And it had the blue wing speculum. It was brown in the body. And I said, well, one bird doesn't look like the others. One has a giant beak on it. Mm-hmm. The other one has small guys. Come on. But, I mean, I didn't write them a ticket. They handed it to me. They didn't try to hide it. They could have stomped it or left it in the marsh. They didn't know.
Right.
And matter of fact, I had them come back to my house, and they had four decoys with no weights. I gave them a bag of 12 mallards with a bag because they had them stuffed in an Under Armour backpack. And football cleats. I'm like, guys, come on, if you're going to do this, just don't make me come write you tickets and seize my decoys back from you.
Right. Yeah,
has a collection. He has a whole barn full of decoys that he's collected over the years. Yeah. I'll collect that.
I literally hadn't used those decoys in a decade. So it didn't hurt my feelings. It helped me. I should have paid him.
Yeah. paid him to take them off your hands.
Yeah. Are there any other, over your years of doing this, are there any other stories that come to mind that are either funny or just lessons learned on this stuff? You know, weird stuff that happens out there. We don't have time.
Seriously.
I don't have enough time. And I keep notes and try to keep a record book going of stories. And when I get time, I punch away on the keyboard. Someday I might put together a book. But one is just to recall and remember some of the scenarios and things that happened. And there are things that I swear I never will ever see again. And there's nothing that can top it. And then my next phone call comes in and it doubles what I just saw that I thought was unbelievable. But I mean, I've had everything from two guys sneaking up on deer, bow hunting, that don't have licenses or tags, hunting illegally. They're out shooting their bow in the backyard. And both of them were trying to sneak up on a deer that's going single file, trying to stay small. And the guy in front tripped. The guy behind him stumbled at the same time, and he had his bow drawn back, and he shot the arrow right in the guy's butt.
Oh, no.
And it buried into him.
Oh, yikes.
And he had to go, and he passed out. When I got there, it looked like somebody took a minnow bucket full of blood and dumped it all over.
Oh, but
Grabbed the arrow and he pulled it out himself and then passed out in the field.
That seems like a cartoon. Like please make this book a cartoon book.
Yeah. And there's a lot of details to that, but let's just say the worst part is I had to go give them both tickets as well.
add insult to injury right there. So, my gosh.
So why do they call you Broadhead Butt?
Yeah. And sometimes you just let karma take over and let it run its course as well.
My goodness.
It serves best cold. I've had guys that drive around at middle of the night with bows and they screw spotlights on where the stabilizers are and they have pressure switches and they were shooting deer out their truck window with their bows. And luckily they were brothers. And one was left-handed, one was right-handed. So they would never get out of the vehicle. They would just stick the bow out the window, turn spotlight, and shoot the deer
right
out the window. Wow. So I got a left hand, right-handed Matthews from those guys. I got to take.
Luckily,
they were terrible shots too.
That's crazy.
Sticking flashlights on where the stabilizer goes.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's now you're really upping your poacher game.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting serious about this.
I mean, when you're poaching games like that, you're probably going to, your next jump is going to be into the thermal game.
Yeah.
They're going to end up sticking thermals on their optic or their guns. And they just, goodness, the lengths that people go to like you said, Ryan, they're probably hunting a lot anyway during the day, but they just can't stand it.
They can't stand it. And I think you're right. I mean, they get that fever, right? And then maybe it's for a specific deer that if they're hunting a lot, they're seeing and they can't seem to catch up with it. And so
they don't have permission on that property.
Right. So they're trespassing or they're going nocturnal or they're baiting or whatever it may be to try to get that that deer. But, you know, it's crazy to me because this is the other thing, you know, the whole social media thing and you share your stuff. But the people who will kill a giant deer illegally, and then get it mounted and display it, right? Like, how do you brag about this, guy? And then I guess people have been caught because from doing that, haven't they? I mean, taking it to a taxidermy, that kind of thing?
For sure. Yeah, it's all the time. And, you know, I'm there with you. You alluded to it, I think, well, that there is no, at least to me, there would be no honor in hanging that on my wall, looking at that, thinking I post that thing and not having a legitimate memory that you could share with people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing harder to remember than a lie. And there's nothing easier to tell than the truth. And there is, when you got those guys and you start asking the story about their deer, when you initially investigate it, the hardest part that they can't do, and it's easy to tell if they're lying, is asking the details. I shot a couple of deer last year, and I can tell you the wind direction. I can tell you probably the temperature. I can tell you a lot of things about that day. You start asking details on people who poach deer, they can't tell you the details. And that's the first clue right away that this thing isn't taken legally. Because you would remember all that stuff.
It's a great point.
Every single miss I've got.
Well, it's a great point because, I mean, you remember, I know for most of us, you'll remember a deer or a hunt that you shot from decades ago.
Oh, yeah.
And like you said, details about it.
That sight picture never leaves.
No. Yeah.
Never leaves.
And it's interesting, too, because those people that want a story, but it doesn't happen. And you can tell when you hear deer story, whether how the person felt and how excited they were. And you just miss that with these guys that do this stuff. And unfortunately, you know, there's a fair number of deer poached, and I have as many non-residents as residents that poach up here. Yeah. I don't look at one any different than others. We got bad people, no matter where you live or what you do, that take advantage of situations and break the law.
So, Jeremy, you are an outdoorsman. I mean, beyond just being a warden, game warden, I mean, you participate in it and you get to do it yourself. You see all these other people. What are some of the things that the good hunters seem to do? What are some of the things that you notice about them that they're out in the field? They're doing it all the time. They seem to be very successful.
Well, the reason I'm smiling is because I think I know how he's going to answer this.
I want to hear it, KJ.
No, you go ahead.
We're still waiting to find out, KJ, what happens with the good hunters.
I'm going to say woodsmanship. And you know what I'm talking about.
I do. I know what you're talking about. there's so much truth to that. You know, usually I can identify a good hunter or fisherman before I even talk to him. And that is something as simple as a wave. If I'm walking up somebody and I wave and they wave back, most of the time they're probably going to be a decent person and are a decent person. If I wave at them, they turn their back to me. Now I know right away that I probably got some issues somewhere.
Yeah.
and then it goes from there. Like KJ says, you can understand a lot just by the lingo and the passion and how they hold themselves, whether or not they look at you in the eye, how they shake your hand, if they even will shake your hand. I know with COVID here, that's different times, but you can tell, you know, if somebody takes care of their stuff and not trashy and, you know, wearing ripped stuff and not taking care of any of their equipment, throwing it on the ground, you just, all those things come in. Nothing one specific sets it off. It's the accumulation of all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, I'm also thinking about not necessarily like as far as law breaking or not law breaking, but, you know, you see a lot of people who, I imagine year after year, they're very successful in their hunts of, you know, what do these folks seem to do, before the season or during the season, that seem to be kind of put them ahead of everybody else as far as being successful.
Boy, KJ, I think we had a lot of these conversations that would last winter that would fall in this. It's a lot of game plan. Again, that woodsmanship skills that come in, you know, it's kind of like the old carpenter saying, you measure twice, cut once.
Mm-hmm.
Deer hunting and what have you. I mean, I scout twice as much as I hunt before I ever climb into a stand. And then you have that plan. And it seems like those guys that do really good traditionally year after year, they don't hunt the same tree or have something that's in itself so amazing that they just automatically have deer coming there. They do their work. They do their homework. Yeah. And they scout and they review and they take scent control serious. They take their sighting in on their weapons, whether it's a bow or a gun, serious. They prepare. You know, I think Abraham Lincoln said, you give me 4 hours to cut down a tree, I'll spend the first 3 hours sharpening the axe. And that's kind of what hunting is.
Yeah. And I think you're completely right. Is we would sit there for hours and hours and talk about, you know, where, what this next set was, like the next hunt, like where you were going to go and, you know, how the wind would lay and what the terrain's like, where do we believe those deer are coming in? And, you know, and a lot of times, like Jeremy'd be like, well, I think they're coming in over here. And we'd go, well, we don't have permission to hunt that. And he goes, well, I know the farmer over there. Let's just go ask him. And we'd go knock on a door.
Yeah.
But, you know,
that's probably a good point, is being willing to knock on those doors. And also, along what you guys are saying, is you don't just go sit in the same box blind in the same spot year after year after year. You kind of adjust your plan based on what you see out there.
Yeah, I've never hunted out of a box blind. And it's funny because they're becoming more popular up here. I do tree stands, but even during late muzzleloader, during our late December, January time, yeah, I hardly ever hunt out of a tree. I want to be mobile. If I need to sit by a fence post and cover up, I'll do that. Being adaptive to the situation, you know, KJ does it too. You make what you have to do work. And yeah, you might have to push stuff sometimes. And the good guys, I think they do that. I'm not saying I'm good. There's a lot better hunters than I, but I think that's a big key to their success.
Yeah, good point. Well, thanks for being on with us, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope I didn't ruin anything.
You ruined it all. Gave them all the good tips, but you didn't tell them where to go. So we're okay.
So if you see a hospital behind the deer you're shooting at, you're saying don't shoot at the deer from there.
You know, that might be one to pass on.
That's just a thought.
Yeah. People frown upon that when they get bullets flying in hospitals. That's one place you want to be safe, not be shot at.
Jeez. Wow. All right. Well, Jeremy King, I hope you guys enjoyed this. So talking with the, you know, what a game warden sees and some advice. I think it's pretty cool. Thanks for being with us, man.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
That's it for us. We'll see you next time on Gun Talk Hunt.